Hi, I'm Jackie, and I'm an alcoholic. Excuse me. My sobriety date is December 18, 1998. I have a home group, and I have a sponsor. And that to me is really important, especially the home group and the sponsor. The sobriety date, it's kind of nice to have one, but if I didn't have one, I wouldn't be standing up here. But, it's really only one day at a time. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. There's a woman that used to come into one of my meetings. I don't really see her much anymore, but she described her drinking exactly like mine in three segments: fun with problems, and problems. And that was really the way my drinking was. I don't remember how old I was, but my first drink, I was probably 15 or 16. I grew up in North Carolina. My dad was a magician, and he had just like outhouse in the back, that we met, my friends and I used to go, and we would spend the night out there. So maybe I was 15 or 16, and somebody had gotten us a bunch of Boone's Farm apple wine. I think about it makes me want to gag. But so I went with my girlfriend, and we got, I think we had a lot. I don't remember. But so we go out to spend the night, and when we shut the door, it locked on the outside. But I didn't know that until I started throwing up all over the place. But you know what? I drank almost all of it. And she didn't drink any. You know, that girl never talked to me again. I didn't really understand why. But I guess because she was an alcoholic and I was. But you know what? It's kind of like soup. I was like this soup that, you pour ingredients in. And when alcohol got poured in at that age, it was just like the right mix for me. Because I grew up in a very small town where I always felt like a square peg in the round hole. Like everybody knew the secret, and I didn't even know what the question was. I always felt that way. I was never comfortable in my own skin. So I got sick as a dog, and I loved it. Because I loved that feeling. I always felt like I was either not pretty enough, not smart enough, not tall enough, I was too short, I was, whatever. When I drank, I felt like I was enough. And I'm a pretty outgoing person, but at the same time, I never felt like I was smart enough, and I was always trying to fit in. And I grew up in a household where my mother said, you don't air your dirty laundry. You don't let people know how you're really feeling. So I grew up with my mother's little voice on my shoulder. So I always walked around saying, I'm just fine. And, we in AA know what that means, right? Fucked up, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. And I was just fine. So it took off then, by that, as soon as I started drinking, then I started to hang around with people that drank like me, even at that age, when we couldn't really get booze. And drugs are a big part of my story, and this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and the bottom line is I'm an alcoholic. But drugs were a big part of my story. And alcohol took me to places I didn't want to go, doing things I didn't want to do with people I didn't want to do it with. Because pretty early on, I lost that power of choice. So I proceeded to, I didn't go to college because, I was too busy trying to fit in school to go to college. So, I proceeded to travel across country. And I was the type of person that if you gave me a little bit of attention, then I thought I was in love with you, I was a big chameleon. I didn't have an opinion because I didn't, because I started drinking so young and I didn't know what I wanted at that time. So I traveled when I was about 18 years old, I left home and traveled with some people and we ended up in Austin, Texas. And, I fell in love with a guy named Roger One Night. That wasn't his last name, but he had a lot of one night stands. That's why his name was Roger One Night. And I fell in love with him. I fell in love with this guy because he had a pair of jeans on that had a hole in the back and he had no underwear on and his name was Roger One Night. And I thought I was in love with this guy. So I said, I'm going to quit my job, and I'm going to stay. So I stayed in Texas. And what I would do, because I couldn't really take care of myself, I would gravitate toward one man to another man to another man, not really having a true relationship. And then I met my husband. And I was actually married for 22 years. I've been sober for 15 and a half. I've been divorced for 15 and a half. But I met my husband, and... it's interesting. Like, I really was in love with this man, but basically we got married because it was like nothing romantic. It was just like we decided one day we needed to get married, so we got married. I think about that today, and it's just alcohol led every decision I ever had. So I got married, and I was pretty much a functioning alcoholic for a very long time. I work now at the same company that I worked for years. I'd come and go and come and go. But I used to drink at work. You know, and I was on the phones. I worked for the cable company. And I remember one day someone was on the other side of the cube. They said, "It smells like somebody's drinking." Somebody else said, "Oh, it must be Jackie." You know, and it's like, but they went about their business, and I continued drinking. You know, they would say, and they tell me today, because a lot of these people, most of these people are really grateful I'm in recovery. There's not one person when I got sober that said, "You didn't need to get sober." Really disappointed me. But, you know, they say, what I would do is I would plan my whole, my lunch hour was spent when the liquor store opened. You know, when I'd go to the liquor store, I always bought those little mini bottles. And I bought those because I've drank vodka because, of course, you know you can't smell it, right? We know that's not true. But at the time, I thought you couldn't smell it. And also, I could hide them all over the house because, see, my husband didn't want me to drink. He thought I had a problem. And so I would buy these little mini bottles because I could hide them in my boots and in my shoes, and they were hidden all over the house. But I would go to the liquor store, and they said, "You know, you change. You change once you get back from your lunch, Jackie, your liquid lunch." But you know what? Because I did such a good job, I'm a really good worker. And, you know, most alcoholics, we're bright. We're good workers. When we're sober, we really show up. And God forbid, I did not want you to know that I was dying on the inside. You know, a woman that came in compared herself to her like a dressed-up trash can. And I could relate to that. Because, see, on the outside, I could look really good, but I was dying on the inside. You know, when I had the stuff, I had the husband, I had the house, you know, I had the job. Didn't have kids because, I didn't have time for kids. You know, it was, my drinking was more important than me having children. And, you know, today it's like part of me is like, you know, I would have been a lousy mother. I would have had, you know, because I wasn't going to quit drinking, that my priority was drinking and drugging. And, you know, my addiction took me downtown D.C. to the worst part of D.C. there is, and I got busted for heroin possession. I was in jail a couple of times, and you know, but I can keep a secret, man. I tell you, I can keep it. My husband never knew that I got busted for heroin possession because I gave somebody else's address, and I had to go downtown D.C. and, you know, use the bathroom in front of somebody 3 days a week. And you know what happened was they said, you know, they didn't really want me. They wanted the person I was with, but I'm the one that, you know, they caught it on me. So when I went in, the judge said, "Okay, if you can give me a clean urine right now, I'll let you go." And I couldn't because I'd gotten high before I went to court. Because, see, at that point, I had no choice, right? So they told me, they said, "Okay, you have 6 weeks. If you can not come up with a dirty urine for 6 weeks, then we will expunge your record." And you know what? I did not drink or use for 6 weeks. 6 weeks in one day, it was on. Because at that point, I thought, well, maybe I really don't have a problem. Maybe I'm not really an alcoholic, you know. Well, 6 weeks in one day, it was on. So, you know, and I was miserable. I was so miserable. I didn't realize until I got sober how miserable I really was. So my husband and I decided that we, you know, I like to do that geographic. You know, if I move here, it won't be quite so bad. So we decided that we're going to buy a business. We're going to move out of the country. So we moved to Mexico, and that's actually where I started getting sober. So we moved to Mexico. We bought a little business, a little hotel in a resort town outside of Cancun. You know, and I thought, well, you know, I don't speak Spanish, so I won't find drugs. And it was a resort town. I knew I'd drink, but drinking was okay. It took me like a week to find a connection because I'm like this neon light that says alcoholic addict. You know, and that's why I gravitate toward these people. So, you know, we had this really great little business that I didn't really run because what I did is I lived in, it was a little hotel, 12-room hotel. We had a house there. But my drinking and using became more important than being married and being with him. So what I did is I moved down to room number 5, you know, and I always tell my story about room number 5 because I think we all have our own room number 5, whatever that might be. For me, it was really room number 5. But I moved to room number 5 because he didn't want me to drink. And at that point, when we had our jobs at home, I could, like, drink during the day. I was a morning drinker. And I could come home and I could be drunk, but I didn't have to drink at home in front of him. When we moved down to Mexico, we didn't know anybody. We lived in room number 4, actually, until we bought our house. So I wasn't able to drink like I wanted to drink. So what I did was I started going to the English-speaking AA meeting down there. And you know what's kind of interesting? One of my favorite sayings is it odd or is it God? Because I don't know why I went to that meeting. I could have told him I went to the meeting. But what I did is I went to the English-speaking AA meeting, and there was a bunch of people there, snowbirds, with a lot of time, a lot of great sobriety. I would go sit in that meeting, and I would be loaded, you know. And then, you know how what we do in AA, we go have coffee, we go, you know, we do that stuff together. Well, I would leave the meeting, I'd go down to the beach, I'd sit there and I'd get drunk. Then I'd go back to the hotel where Larry was and say, what a spiritual meeting we had. And sometimes he'd ask me the topic and I'd just make up something because I didn't know. But you know, these people, God bless them, these people went, they started coming by the hotel. You know, and I was crazy. They used to take bets that I was, they said, that girl's crazy. She is not going to stay sober. You know, and so they would come by, and for the first time in my life, like I'd be upstairs, I'd either be drinking, drunk, hungover, thinking about drinking. It was in that cycle. You know, we're in that cycle that I couldn't get out of. And my manager would call and say, they're here again. And I'm like, oh, good gosh. So I'd come downstairs, and I would sit, and they would talk to me. They didn't talk at me. They talked to me. You know, for the first time in my life, someone didn't say to me, you drink too much, you need to quit drinking. What they did is they shared their experience, strength, and hope. They told me what happened with them. And, you know, for the first time, there was that little inkling of, maybe I don't have to live this way. You know, and so that's what they said. You don't have to live this way, Jackie. So what happened was I started, part of my story is four treatment centers. My first treatment center was in Charlottesville. I can't even remember the name of it now, but I went there, and I don't remember much about that, really. I know that I drank. I went to that treatment center, this is before I moved to Mexico, and when Larry picked me up, we went by to have dinner, to have lunch, and I drank that day. So fast forward, I'm in Mexico, and so these people started sending me to treatment. I went to three treatment centers while I was in Mexico, and the first one was Hazleton, and it was very nice. You know, I got my own room, somebody made my bed up, really good food, they had a jacuzzi, they had a pool, I loved it. Don't remember much about the steps. I think we did work the steps. I don't remember. But I remembered it was kind of nice. And, you know, like for 30 days, I didn't have to worry about Larry. You know, I was detoxed. I felt pretty good, you know. And I really was ready to come out of there. And I honestly didn't really, I had no desire to quit drinking. Because at that time, the consequences, I mean, even though, look, the consequences hadn't gotten bad, but I had went to jail for heroin addiction. That's where my mind was. The consequences weren't that bad. But they started to get bad. So I came back out, and what I would do is I'd come back to the same thing doing the same, with the same people and then wonder why, and relapse and wonder why nothing changed. I would come back, Larry would pick me up at the hotel and he would never ask me how things were. You know, just like I'd gone off on some vacation, and actually that was kind of a vacation compared to the next treatment center I went to. So it took me like about a week to relapse. So, and then I would, you know, I'd stop going to the, I stopped going to the meetings, and then didn't it get bad enough? I moved into room number 5. I would not go out during the day. I would go out when the sun went down. I would party all night long by myself, and then I'd come in when the sun went up, and I'd put the blankets over the, you know, so it was really dark. You know, and here's this tiny little hotel that everybody knew what was going on with me. You know, but that was more important to me than being married and being, you know. Because at that point, I said, as I said, I had lost total choice of what I was going to do. So I go back. So they sent me to the second treatment center. Now, mind you, when you know, Hazleton had the pool, had the jacuzzi, I had my swimsuit, nice food. So then I go to this place called Impact, which is in California, and it was a boot camp treatment center. There was no jacuzzi. There was no pool. So I go in, right, and they're unpacking my bags, and they're, like, holding up the little, my swimsuit, and they're like, what is this? And I go, for the pool? And they go, there is no pool. You know, they strip search you. I mean, it was pretty rough. So I was there for 3 months, and it was so hard. You know, it was so hard. But part of me was really glad because I was just tired. And I really kind of thought, okay, maybe I won't drink. You know, like, it really, like, none of this ever really entered my mind that maybe I can stop drinking. I just needed a break. So I was there for 3 months. So 3 months, they recommended that I go to a halfway house. And I went, no, you don't understand. I'm married. I got to go back to Mexico. So I get in, you know, I get on the plane. I go back to Mexico. Larry picks me up, doesn't ask me a thing. You know, how are you? Nothing. You know, and because I didn't know how to communicate. I was in a marriage that, you know, in our book it says I was incapable of having a relationship with another human being, and that makes my hair stand up because I was married 22 years and I had no idea how to have a relationship, to be a wife, to be a friend, you know, to be a sister, to be a daughter. I had no idea because I wasn't taught those things in my household. So I come back, takes me 2 weeks to relapse. So, and you know, today, these people that helped me, God bless them, you know, they love me until I could love myself. You know, and so the night that I relapsed, I was down on the beach. We lived about a block and a half from the beach, and I'm on the beach. It's like 5 o'clock in the morning. There's nobody on the beach, right? So, and I'm so totally loaded. So I decided to go back to the hotel. I'm walking up the street. There's nobody on the street, mind you, nobody. I turn the corner, and there's Chuck and Bill. Chuck and Bill are two guys, two old-timers that Bill has recently passed. But they had like, one had 35 years, the other guy had 40 years. Great recovery. No friggin' body on the street, and here they come this way, and here I come that way. And I'm like, oh, good God. You know, I tried to figure out how I could turn around because I was so embarrassed. And you know what? I got to them, and they stopped, and Bill, Chuck just looked at me and says, you're going to die. And then they kept walking. And I'm like, oh, my God. So at that, and it was bad. But that wasn't bad enough. So I had to, it had to get even worse. And my M.O. was that, you know, I would go to a really nice hotel that I could not afford. Because, and I used to drink really expensive booze because, that I could not afford. You know, I jacked up my credit card because I thought that that way I didn't look as bad as what I really was. You know, that was, you know, I was really bad. But I thought if, you know, I got, it was still my mother saying, you got to look good, Jackie, no matter what. So, December 18, 1998, I was in a fetal position in the bed, unable to function. It's a very, I was in an alcohol and cocaine psychosis. Two women in the program came in, they sat with me. So that night I called up the treatment center that I had just left a couple of weeks ago. Now, mind you, that's a long-term treatment center where people knew me. And I called them up and I said, you know, I relapsed, I need to come back. And they said, great, Jackie, we have a bed for you. Come now. And I go, well, no, you don't understand. It's almost Christmas time. I got to be here for Christmas. You know, and I thought, and, you know, that's our disease. You know, and thank God I was struck with the gift of desperation because they said to me, you come back now or you don't come back. And you know what? I was 85 pounds soaking wet. You know, I was going to die. So I said yes. My husband was pissed. You know, because at that time he didn't want me to drink, but he didn't want me to use. Because what happens, this is a family disease. You know, he might not be an alcoholic. Oh, maybe he is. Who the heck knows? But he was as sick as I was. You know, only I had the buffer of alcohol and drugs, and he didn't. He was so angry because I was leaving him one more time in Mexico, you know, where we didn't speak the language that well. It was just a different environment. He threatened to take the hotel away, threatened to shut it down. I said, go ahead. At this point, it's like, go ahead. I can't do this because I will not be here. I will die. So he drove me, when he drove me to the hotel in to the airport in Cancun, he drove like a crazy man, and he said, if I had a gun, I would kill us both. And he dropped me off at the airport, and he said, I'm going into Cancun, I'm going to kill myself. You know, but I went anyway. Because at that point, I had nowhere else to go. I was dying. And I know this with every fiber of my being. If I pick up a drug or a drink, I will be right back in that fetal position in the bed, unable to function. Because that's where I left off. So I went back to the treatment center. Now, mind you, I still got to look good, right? So I'm on the airplane, and I'm like, of course, I did have a whole bunch of cocaine and alcohol that I stopped at a hotel for overnight to do it all because it was my last hurrah. So I go in there, and I didn't want them to know how bad it was because I still needed to look good. So, but they knew, you know what? They just knew. It's kind of a boot camp treatment center because they will, if they see there's something about you that there's a chance that you're going to get sober, they're going to do something crazy to you. Like one guy, he was really bad about using the phone. He was this big burly guy with tattoos, so they hung a pink princess telephone around his neck and made him wear it around. They would do things like that. Well, what they did for me, because I like to talk. So what I would do is I would talk, because I don't want you to get close to me. They even said in meetings, I'd sit there, and when I'd go to share, my foot would go up. It's like, don't get close to me. Don't get to know me because you might not like me. You might find out that I'm dying on the inside. So I really want to tell everybody, you know, it wasn't really that bad out there. I just came back for a little cleanup, you know. It was really that bad. Well, what happened was they put me on a gag order. So what that meant was I couldn't talk to anybody. There was 150 people in the treatment center, and I had four roommates. I could talk to no one, and no one could talk to me. Now, these are called special treatments, right? And they usually last 2 weeks. I'm thinking, okay, I can do anything for 2 weeks. I can stand on my head for 2 weeks. Mine lasted for 2 months. So for 2 months, I couldn't open my mouth. because every time, what they did is they waited until they saw my body language change. That was harder to me than quitting drinking, because what it taught me is my disease is in my thinking. It's not in my drinking. You know, it's like it's in between my ears. It can come out in all different ways. And for me, it was the way that I talk. You know, and it was so hard. I used to sit in the corner every Tuesday when my caseworker would come by, you know, ready for her to take it off, and she would walk right past me, and I would start crying. You know, and it was awful. I broke out in hives all over. I had to work. We had to clean up and do stuff. They like I said, they didn't make our beds. They didn't let us swim. They didn't do nothing. But what they did is they gave us the steps. You know, they took us through the steps. They made us get a sponsor. They made us get women's numbers. God, I was scared of women. I could relate to the men, but I didn't know how to relate to women. I was scared. But they made me call these people, and thank God. Thank God. So it lasted 2 months. One day, you know, and it's like I even had to work the kitchen line, and they had a sign that says, "She's on a gag order. Don't talk to her." You know, so not only did I feel like it's under this light, then they got to put it like this, you know. And it was a humbling experience. And see, I never knew the difference between humiliation and humility. When I was drinking, I was very, very humiliated. I pray to have humility now, you know. They saw that I was comfortable in my own skin, so they took the gag order off, and I couldn't think of anything to say. I was like, "Oh man!" So, but you know what? It's like today for me. If my talking gets a certain way, I start talking kind of fast, and people know me and love me enough to tell me that, you know, you're talking a little too fast, and I go, "Okay," because that's my disease. Especially if I start talking, and "How you doing?" I'm fine. And they can tell, you know, people love me enough if they know, if they can see the look on my face that I'm not really fine. But I tell you I'm fine. Sometimes if I'm doing okay, I go, I'm good. Then you know I'm good. But if I say I'm fine, that usually means there's something wrong with me. So I came out of there, and they recommended that I don't go back to Mexico. And, you know, my first sponsor, she scared me. She told me I needed to get divorced and not go back to Mexico. I don't recommend a sponsor ever to say that. Because I didn't do that. I mean, I ended up getting divorced, but it scared me. And I thought, I don't want anything to do with this sponsor business if they're going to tell you what to do. Well, what happened was I ended up going back to Arlington, Virginia, where I live, because I needed to, finally, you know what? Finally, I needed something suck in. And that was my spiritual experiences, because I was finally, for the first time in my entire, even as a little kid, I was never comfortable. I was comfortable in my own skin. But I knew that I couldn't go back to Mexico, not right away. But I didn't really think I was going to get divorced. That was not in my plan. You know, my plan was to go back to D.C. area and get a job, get insurance, get connected with AA, which I did. I started going to a 6 a.m. meeting, because when I was in Mexico, what I would do toward the end is I would tell Larry that I was going to my yoga class. When I go to my yoga class, I would actually go and I'd have these little, remember I bought those little bottles of tequila? I mean, vodka. Well, they didn't have those in Mexico. They had bags of tequila, really nasty tequila. So I would buy these bags of tequila, but the only reason I bought the bags is because I could put them in my pocket and hide them. So I would buy these bags of tequila, and then I'd go down to the Zocula, the town circle, where the guy sold the fresh squeezed orange juice, because I really wanted to make sure that I was healthy, you know, fresh squeezed. So I'd buy these fresh squeezed orange juice, and I would pour that tequila in there. I would go sit on the beach, and I would drink it, and I would throw up. It was predictable. And that's, so when I came back, I was, you know, I was petrified of drinking. So I started going to a 6 a.m. meeting at a club we have in Falls Church. You know, and I remember walking up those steps and hearing those people, and I'm like, they're laughing, and I don't know what the hell they're laughing about. There's nothing funny about this. And, you know, and that's how I felt. Like, you know, I thought I was sentenced to, like, never having any fun anymore. You know, and I look back now, and like I said, my fun with problems and problems, the problems part came a long time ago. So I went up those steps, and I was scared to death because I'd never, you know, I didn't know how to talk to people. They loved me, too. They would just, you know, like I connected so well with this meeting, and I actually spent the first 2.5 years, unless I traveled, I never missed that meeting. Now I can't. I go to other meetings because I can't get out of bed. You know, for a 6 a.m. meeting. I thought I was going to move back to Mexico. It turned out I didn't move back to Mexico. We got divorced. You know, the beauty of my recovery is my ex-husband and I are, like, still business partners in the hotel, and we are very, very good friends. And that's the gift of recovery, is that he and I are great friends. We make really good ex-husband and wives. You know, I wouldn't want to be married to him again, and he wouldn't want to be married to me again. But, you know, and it's funny how this disease is like, I was really bad. I lived in room number 5. And he said to me, well, you weren't really that bad, were you? I'm like, and you know, thank goodness I didn't feed into that, because I could have said, well, you know, maybe I'm not. Maybe I can just have one drink. But I said, no, I was really that bad, you know, and I was able to honestly say that to him. So, you know, I come and go from Mexico now. I go a couple of times a year. This coming February, we're celebrating our English-speaking AA meeting and celebrating our 20-year anniversary, which is really cool. I normally go every Labor Day to an AA convention in St. Louis that one of the women who's from the English-speaking AA meeting, she gets it coordinated. There's probably 800 people there. It's in a hotel. And most of us are from that group go to this every year. And she passed away 3 weeks ago, very suddenly. So I'm not going. And, I just was telling Lydia that it's just like, you know, I don't even know what to do with myself. I'm going to go to a bunch of meetings. This is what I'm going to do. I'm not going to drink. You know, it's the first time in 13 years that I haven't gone to this AA convention. And so, you know, my recovery is like, it's better than I could imagine. But it's nothing like I thought. I'm certainly not married again. I don't have a boyfriend. I don't have a husband. I don't have children. You know, I can very easily look at what I don't have. But if I can get grateful, my sponsor says to me, you know, write a gratitude list, 3 things that you're grateful for. If I can be grateful, then I don't look at what I don't have. What I look at is what I do have. So in recovery, you know, I didn't go to college. Remember, I didn't go to college because I was too busy partying. So at 50 years old, I went to school. I'm a certified substance abuse counselor. And I'm a 4.0 GPA. I'm a straight A student. You know, and guess what? It's because I wasn't drinking and drugging and I could study. So I worked full-time and I went to school. I'm not doing that as a practice anymore because I just couldn't make enough money to support myself. I do it. I volunteer. So what's interesting is I go, this job I told you I had that I drank at the job, you know, I come and go and come and go. And I've left there 4 times and they've hired me back 4 times. And I'm now the manager of 15 people at the same store that I used to drink at, you know, in 1990 when I used to drink there. And they all know I'm in recovery, and they're glad, you know. And when I got sober, I had some health issues. They thought I had ovarian cancer, you know. I have Hep C. I had Hep C. I don't have it anymore now. I got something else from the medicine. Everything that I had, and I went through it. My husband left me for another woman, and you know it was so freaking painful. But I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I listened, and I talked to other people, and there was always somebody who'd been through the same thing that I'd been through. And they would walk over to me and they would share to me what they went through so that I didn't have to have my husband leave me for another woman, have health issues and all that. I didn't have to drink over this. But it was painful. You know, and what I've learned in AA is that, you know, that I can walk through anything sober. But the key is I have to go through it. I can't go around it. I can't pretend it doesn't exist. I have to go through it because I used to be, you know, feel a certain way, and I thought that was the way I was always going to feel. Now I know it's going to pass. I might feel really good today, and guess what? That's going to pass too. You know, it all passes. And there'll be another experience for me to experience. You know, and I would never be able to experience the beautiful moments of life if I wasn't a sober woman in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, what's kind of cool is I shouldn't say it's cool. For 15 years, I haven't really had a boyfriend or anything. And for me, that's a big deal because I've gravitated toward men to validate me, to make me feel like I was okay. You know, that if I didn't have a partner, that maybe there was something wrong with me. You know, and that was a huge gift for me, that I was able to learn to be with me. You know, and I guess what? I have an opinion. You know, I used to be, somebody would say, what movie you want to go see? And I'd go, oh, whatever movie you want to go see. What's your favorite color? Well, what is your favorite color? You know, I didn't really have an opinion. You know, now I have an opinion. I have things that I like, you know. And, you know, I can also be patient, kind, loving, and tolerant, which I wasn't when I was, you know. I wasn't patient, kind, loving, and tolerant. There's a guy that comes in our meetings and he says, you know, I practice patience, tolerance, kindness, love, and forgiveness every day. You know, I am so, so grateful for the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, my, because it's my life, it's my social life. You know, once I went down to Mexico, it's interesting how things work. You know, it's, I went down to Mexico, I was probably 2 years sober, and I'm walking down the street, and I'm kind of walking down. And every time I go back, it's always kind of weird, you know, at first, because that was where my disease was really bad. So I'm walking down the street, and I had my head down, I'm looking, and there's some kind of drugs on the side. You know, and I was 2 years sober. There was no NA meetings, it was only AA meetings. So I looked at it, and I went, oh, my God. So I picked it up, I looked at it. You know, and for just a quick minute, I thought, you know what, nobody would know. Nobody would know. But I would know. And for the first time in my life, I was like, well, I would know, and that really matters. So I took it home, gave it to my husband, he flushed it down the toilet. And that was the first night there was an NA meeting in town. You know, and that shows me that, you know, that there is, you know, my higher power works in my life. You know, and I had, you know, in that gag order, I'm kind of going all around here, but when I was in that, you know, when I was in that gag order and we would sit in meetings, I had to, the reason they did is because I was so busy wanting to share that I didn't listen to what you said because I wanted to say what I had to say because I thought I was, that was, you know, I had really something, you know, great to say. I really didn't. But in that gag order, I was forced to listen, you know, and I heard things that were probably said 1,000 times. And what really, what I heard mostly was, you know, you need to find a God of your understanding. Because one day that might be all that comes between you and a drink. And that was very important because I had trouble with the God thing when I came in. You know, I didn't really believe, you know. And I thought that when I looked at the steps, I thought that God was in every, you know, every sentence. It's really not. But when this gentleman said, of my understanding, I can pick any God I want. You know, I don't have to have them. My mom was God. My grandma was God. I can have my God. You know, and my God is a kind, loving woman. You know, that's what my God is. And that as long as I can rely on that higher power, you know, and that's not easy. You know, I told you before, my disease is in my thinking, not my drinking. And what happened with me is I got into recovery, and I didn't drink. I haven't drank in 15 and a half years. But I decided that maybe spending money might be a good idea. So what I did is I got myself in a lot of debt because what I was doing was trying to fill that God-shaped hole with something other than Alcoholics Anonymous, the steps, my sponsor, and my higher power. So I was telling my friend here that on the way up here that what happened with me is I got into a lot of debt, and I wasn't telling anybody because I was too embarrassed. And at one point, this has probably been about 5 years ago, I wanted to kill myself because I couldn't deal with it. This debt was so big that I couldn't deal with it. You know, but thank goodness I had, you know, I had a good enough people that loved me enough and they knew something was wrong and I was able to share with them how far in debt I am. And, you know, it's, you know how we say that if you talk about, that's why in meetings we talk about things, because if you keep it inside, it's going to eat, it will eat my soul and I will eventually drink because that's my natural default. I'm an alcoholic. And I will drink. So I told my friend, and you know, it lost its power. Now the debt's still there, but it, you know what? I chip away with it and chip away, and I don't miss a payment. And I just, you know, and I'll probably be 100 years old, and that debt's still gonna be there. But that's okay. You know, it's a lot better than me drinking. You know, and now I don't want to kill myself over this. You know, I have a friend who. When I came into the meeting in Playa del Carmen, he always says, he introduced himself, and he says, my name is Roy, and I will always be an alcoholic. And I thought, what in the world? I didn't understand that. And I know that my name is Jackie, and I will always be an alcoholic. I might not have a drink for 15 and a half years, but I will always be an alcoholic. You know, my natural default is to excess. You know, and you know, I can now be a workaholic. I'm now learning now that what I got to do is learn some balance in my work. You know, and I do that through working the steps, you know, through going through the steps. I'm getting ready to start another four step with my sponsor. I haven't even spoke that out loud to anybody. But I thought I need to go through another four step. And that's what, you know, about things that are going on with me today. Because I'll be honest with you, I really do want a boyfriend now. But I think until everything is right with me, am I going to attract the right person in my life? You know, and you know what? Maybe my passion's not to have anybody. And if that's the way it is, guess what? My life is so full. My life is full. You know, and I don't live in room number 5 anymore with the shades drawn and ordering pizza every night because that's the only thing they would deliver in Mexico was this Mexican pizza. That wasn't very good either. But I couldn't go out because, you know, I couldn't go out when the sun was up. I was like a vampire. I'm watching the clock. I've got a little bit of time, but I'm really kind of running out of things to say. So I don't want to start lying. So or making up stuff. They might. But you know what it is? All of a sudden, that'll become my story. And I go, I didn't know. But I thank you very much for letting me be here to share my experience, strength, and hope.